It's time to present another segment in the ongoing series Revolutionary Soup that I began in February and have been featuring monthly on Women's Focus. Revolutionary Soup is all about food and our relationship with it and each other. My desire is to get us, that's you and me, more intimately involved with the food we eat and the food perhaps we should be eating. And I love having on this program women who grow their food and eat their veggies, and not only that, bring an awareness to the world, to our families, our schools, our communities, that we can be in control of what we choose to eat. And today's topic of conversation is cool weather vegetables, what they are and ways to grow them right now. And I'm telling you, this is the time right now. I'm very excited about it because if you've missed the summer growing season like me, we still have time to sow our seeds and have some delicious, healthy veggies ready to harvest in maybe 30, 60, 80 days, depending on the vegetable, of course. And even if you never had an intention of gardening or perhaps are intimidated somewhat by it, and sometimes I am, stick with us and see what you think. It may be easier than you imagine. We can grow together. Let me introduce to you my guest this afternoon, to whom you may get the opportunity to talk. That's the intention, because we're going to be taking calls from listeners a little bit later on. Nisa Patterson is here. She has a master's in maternal child public health and has worked in the field of school health for 10 years in New Mexico. About 8 years ago, she started gardening with youth in schools, and this became her true passion. Right now, she's a stay-at-home mom, avid home gardener, and a volunteer with APS Growing Gardens teams. And I will tell you that the Growing Gardens team is a group of Albuquerque public school staff and community volunteers whose mission is to provide networking, training, and resources to school staff who want to garden with students. And they have a really wonderful vision, which is for Albuquerque schools to have vibrant gardens, outdoor classrooms where children are learning through experience about the wonders of the natural world and the cultivation of food. And we talked about that on a Revolutionary Soup segment a couple of months ago, and Nisa was on the show, and we talked about gardening in the schools, and I welcome her back. And also with us is Mary Irwin. She's an educator with APS. She taught for a number of years at Bandelier Elementary in Southeast Albuquerque at the third grade level, and started what I've been told is one of the most beautiful school gardens, and hopes to do the same at Wilson Middle School, where she has begun teaching the school year. And she brought me a beautiful homegrown tomato this afternoon, so I thank her for that. Joining us, too, is Patty Ames. Patty has been gardening all of her life. She's an active member of ABQ, that's Albuquerque Backyard Farms Collaborative, which is a great group of people whose mission is to help new gardeners learn how to grow fruits and vegetables in their backyards, on their patios and porches. And they want to see growing nutritious food become possible for everyone. Amen for that. Definitely. Patty grows as much of her own food as possible in the East Mountains, and I know she likes very much to do cool weather gardening, and I think she's going to share with us why this is such a great time to garden. And Patty is also, I should say, a massage therapist. Thank you all for being here. A really big thank you. I had another feature planned for today, and it got postponed, and did some really intense networking this week to put together a whole segment, and the three of you came through, and it means a lot to me. And one of you, in fact, altered some of your plans for today so you could be on. It's really, really appreciated. So thank you so much. Now, before we dive into the cool weather veggie conversation, I want to learn a little bit more about each of you and how you made your way, you found your way to growing your own food. So, Patty, you said that, which I just said in the introduction, that you've been gardening all your life. So when did that begin?
It began.
Oh, let me turn on the mic. Sorry.
Okay. It began when I was about 8, and I planted a potato. And in the spring. And
a potato seed?
Yeah, just a chunk of potato.
In school?
Yeah,
no,
just in my backyard. And then in the fall, I dug up, you know, which was 15 potatoes. And I just was hooked ever since.
From one seed?
From one seed.
Wow.
From
one plant.
One little
yeah.
chunk of potato, you know, where the little sprouts come up. You just plant that.
So a potato changed your life in a way.
It changed my life.
Wow. So. Yeah, that's very, very cool. What about you, Mary?
Well, I grew up gardening in Central Texas, and for me, gardening wasn't necessarily what brought me to gardening. It was actually food that brought me to gardening because I really like to eat good food. And gardening in Central Texas is pretty hot and buggy and scratchy and not always the most pleasant place to be, but I love what comes out of the garden. And moving out here, it's a little bit, in some ways, a little bit easier to garden, in other ways, a little bit more difficult. And so food really brought me to gardening here. So, and I have a garden at home, and like I said, do gardening with my students.
What got you into starting that whole that thing at Bandelier to begin a garden?
Well, I was influenced very heavily by a professor here at UNM who taught me to look at some of my own values and bringing that more into the classroom. And I grew up kind of in a nature-loving household, and but was not applying that in my classroom and was kind of frustrated as a teacher. And she encouraged me to kind of turn that around and really look at what was valuable to me and bring that into the classroom. And I think it's transformed a lot of the way I approach teaching. So,
and probably has transformed some students as well.
I'd like to think so. I sure hope so.
Yeah. And Nisa Patterson, what experience do you remember from 8 years ago working with students in the schools on gardening that you came to realize that this is your true passion?
I would say about 8 years ago, my true passion was reinvigorated. I can remember the first time gardening at 12. I can remember the picture in my mind. I was sitting in the sun. It was in Florida. I can feel still the sun on my back. And I was patting mounds that I was planting my squash in. And I just had this complete overwhelming feeling that I loved this, that it just completely spoke to me. So I remember gardening one summer, a couple summers in my yard, and then I sort of lost it. And then about 10 years ago, I personally picked it up, and I also picked it up with students. And at the time, about 8 years ago, I was working out on the Navajo Reservation, and we had this trailer where we provide services to youth, medical services, and I just kept looking around the trailer and thinking, you know, we needed some life around the trailer, and we put in some raised bed gardens around the trailer, and that's when a lot of light bulbs and connections happened for me to see how much I lit up and how much the youth lit up at our gardening together.
Do you remember a particular youth and a particular time when...
I do. I mean, I remember his name.
You do? Great.
I do. I'm not going to say that because I sort of, I believe people's confidentiality. So it was spring break one year, and we invited the kids to come garden, and many of them live several miles from where the trailer was, but we said be there at, I think, 8 o'clock on a certain morning during spring break. And we got there at 8 o'clock, and they were sitting on the front steps of the trailer, and they had pretty much never been on time for anything ever before, but here they were. I had about 5 or 6 kids just sitting there, and most of them had walked several miles at the prospect of gardening together and putting in a garden. And we spent the entire day. We opened the front doors of the trailers. We put on Botticelli. We played opera. This is no kidding. We played it really loud because nobody else was around. And we built our raised beds. And I remember a particular youth that we had some pretty deep conversations that day and learned some things about what was really going on with him. And it was very helpful, I think. He was receiving counseling in our regular program, but we never could really crack the nut. And on that day, I think we really started to crack the nut talking together while gardening.
Oh, that's really wonderful.
And we serve spring rolls, Botticelli spring rolls, and gardening.
That's the way to do it.
That sounds lovely.
Navajo Reservation.
So if you just joined us, this is Women's Focus, and I've been doing this series, Revolutionary Soup, all about food, and today we're going to be talking about cool weather gardening, and so now is the opportunity. Is it not, Patty? You had written to me, you know, a few things about yourself, and you said this is like the greatest time as far as you're concerned to plant, and everyone else here is shaking their head in agreement, so let's do a go-around. Why don't we start with you, and why is it so great right now?
Well, for one, the heat is less, and hopefully the bugs have come and gone. And we're also getting rain, so it's still less than we want, but at least it's coming down. And I think the plants get a good chance to get well established, and so you have more of a prolonged harvest through the fall. So some of the challenges of summer gardening are lessening. So that's why I think it's good.
So I'm going to ask a question, then I want to hear from the rest of you why you think it's such a great time, because what I'm learning is to let go of my sometime anxiety of doing it right. And I had been reading, because I totally missed the summer and to do planting, and I've been reading that mid-August is a time. So a couple of weeks ago I said, all right, I can't do it this weekend. It's mid-August. So last week, and I'm doing in containers, and I want to talk about that later. And I planted some things, but I wound up not having enough potting soil that I bought. So I have to do that again, like today. So I need my little reassurance that it's not too late, especially since all these people are listening to us right now.
I can definitely assure you this is the best time for schools to be planting. I know people often, when they think of summer garden or gardens, they think of their summer gardens. And for schools, most of the time the kids aren't there and it's hard to keep things watered and that sort of thing. But in schools, it's a perfect time to plant because the kids are going to be here for the next 9 months. And they can watch their plants grow. They can nurture them during that time frame and then harvest and eat what they've grown and start that cycle over several times, actually, during the next few months. And some of the school gardens that have the covers over them, like we have at Bandelier, makes it so you can really grow virtually all winter, and so consecutive sowing. So if you don't get to your seeds this week, then you know, making sure that you do it over the next couple of weeks, so you have lettuce that's growing pretty much from now until next spring, pretty thoroughly. And it's a great time for, like I said, kids to see that, to see the whole cycle of the plants. So,
and Nisa, you're an all year-round grower. How did your garden grow? Last time you were on the show, you talked to us about having a what I envisioned, and I always wanted. I don't live so far away. I wanted to come and see it, and I haven't done that. But you had a huge garden in your front yard, across the street from an elementary school.
Yeah, we had a problematic grass in the front yard, and it was taking too much water. And I remember the day I just had this brainstorm. I called my husband at work, and I said, let's plow it all under and put a garden. And it's been a pretty magical thing. We love it. Our neighbors love it. And I feel like, because so many people watch it, the kids watch it, the parents, I have almost weekly parents tell me as they drop kids off at school, thank you, this is a beautiful thing to look at, or I love your sunflowers. Or so I feel strongly that I want to keep planting things and keep showing people that it's all the time. It's all the time you can be doing stuff in the garden. And I think we have to resist, though, very strongly, we have to resist in ourselves that striving for perfection a lot of us have, because there's nothing perfect about gardening. It's completely experiment. It's completely improvisational. It's for many new people, they feel intimidated, and I think we just have to kind of shrug our shoulders and put them down, you know, release some of that tension and just try it. There's no magic date. And I think I'm trying to show people that as they come by my garden, it's just the beauty can keep coming. It can keep coming throughout the year. And in fact, if you miss August completely, then October's a great time to put in garlic. So it just keeps coming.
Right.
Everything you miss, right, there's something else coming. So really, you're missing nothing.
Well, that's a beautiful way of putting it. Thank you. It makes me feel good.
I always encourage people to start with radishes.
Radishes, yeah.
Because they grow quickly, and you know, you get an immediate results, and they grow easily, and they don't care so much about the soil.
And I could say very excitedly, that was one of the things I planted for the first time in a pot last week, radishes. And then within a few days, I said, those sprouts are coming up, like right now.
Yeah. We planted this week in my classroom, and within 3 days, we had radish sprouts. And, you know, these are big kids that are looking at it, and they're astonished that there's sprouts immediately.
Yeah. So. It is. It's very, very exciting.
Radishes are good for the self-esteem.
Yes, we all need to...
Definitely radishes. Yeah, good ego food. Excellent.
So, Patty, you live on the east side of the mountains, and what do you grow at this time, like now? What can you plant now?
Right now I have beets growing. I have cilantro that I've planted, and nasturtiums, which are an edible flower, and Swiss chard, and spinach. And spinach is a little tricky out here because the soil needs to be cool. So a simple way to do that is you put boards over the spinach that you've planted so that it keeps it cold.
Did you say boards?
Boards, like a 2x4, anything that will shade the soil. Oh. And then once those sprouts come up, then you take them off, of course, and that's the hardest part with the spinach, and spinach is really hardy through the cool season.
Will those sprouts come up even if they're covered and wiped from
right,
the
they
sun?
Right, they don't need the light. A lot of seeds do, but spinach doesn't.
Oh, I didn't know
so
that.
That's a simple. Or cardboard, if you don't have 2x4s, works just as well.
So where do you grow? I know you have or are building a greenhouse.
Yes, I have it's the frame of a greenhouse, so it's just a like a hoop house, basically. And I have some beds inside the greenhouse. And so as the winter progresses, I'll cover those inner crops, so it'll have two layers of protection. And my hope is to have year-round greens, lettuce and carrots, all of those things.
Can you explain what a hoop house is for those who don't know?
A hoop house is just like a metal frame, and then plastic goes over that. And then the ends are closed off. And so it just helps insulate. In the summer, it works well because it blocks some of the cooking heat. But in the winter, it helps keep things warm and protected from the frost.
So is that how you do most of your growing? Is that system?
Half and half. Half and half right
now. The other
now
half is?
Is just out in the garden. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. What about you, Mary?
Well, having started the hoop house gardens at Bandelier, I'm a big fan of those. They reduce the amount of water loss to evaporation, so definitely less watering. They tend to keep more pests out, not always, but tend to kind of reduce the number of pest infestations. And again, they extend that growing season. We grew food throughout the school year. And the toughest time we had was last February when the really hard frost came. But even with that, the hoop houses, the stuff that was in the middle of it, didn't freeze. It was pretty remarkable. And that was a pretty hard frost. So I'm a big fan of it. Maintaining the soil quality when you're planting in it year-round becomes kind of the challenge. And so teaching kids how to make dirt becomes kind of another part of that cycle and part of that system.
And the challenge for that is because?
Just because most kids think that they don't really have any control on making dirt. So it's kind of it's a new thing for them to learn that dirt happens.
Dirt happens. I thought you were saying that because it was hoop house set up that it was difficult to do.
No. Well, just maintaining that soil quality, right, because if you plant in something for a long period of time in the same spot, the nutrients become depleted somewhat. And so you can improve that soil quality by improving it using compost and that sort of thing.
And that's Mary Irwin. Nisa?
I just wanted to say another way to look at fall and winter is letting our soil rest. And that's an equally, because Mary's saying, growing year-round means the plants are taking nutrients out of the soil. There's certain plants that put nutrients back in, and you can work with that. But also letting our soil rest and adding manure, other things, layers of leaves, that's an equally admirable thing to do. And you can also look at it as growing. You're growing your soil through the winter. So if you miss all other deadlines, then just work on your dirt.
Great suggestion.
Right, yeah, especially keeping the soil covered is really important because the sun will leach out a lot of the good nutrients out of the soil. So kind of recreating the forest.
So you're saying that if you're sort of, as Nisa says, growing the soil, a good idea is to keep it covered?
Mm-hmm.
With
leaves, with straw.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yes. Yes.
Old weeds you don't want, yeah. Cardboard, right.
But for those who are listening and want to grow now. So is the hoop house an easy thing to construct? Patty,
it is fairly easy, and I was kind of inspired by Chuck O'Hare and Alex that has the veggie growers.
Yeah,
and he came and did a workshop at our school with the parents to teach them how to build those hoops, the hoop house part of it, and then parents built the boxes and themselves, and we built the hoops, but he came and did a workshop with us, and so that there was an ongoing group of parents who knew how to maintain them because they do require a little bit of maintenance, changing out the covers. During the summer, you use a different kind of shade cloth, and in the winter, this time of year about, you start to change over to the heavy plastic. And yeah, we built them all ourselves at Bandelier, and currently at Wilson, where we're working on building our garden, we're going to be building probably just the tops to the hoop house and then building the garden in the ground, so using kind of a cold frame idea for growing during the school year. So,
and a cold frame enables one to grow plants that are through the winter, let's say.
Kind of like so. It sets more on the ground. So if you're planting in the ground, it's kind of a way to extend the growing season in the ground using a hoop house, using that hoop house effect. So.
And Nisa, what about you? When you grow, your plants are in the ground?
They're in the ground, and last year I did hoop houses, and I appreciate them, and I like them, and I think I'll probably do some, but I vacillate internally between that and just good old-fashioned leaves. And when I practice, so you have carrots in the ground and under your hoop house and carrots in the ground where I just pile leaves on top of them on a really cold night. I just go out and pile mm-hmm. a bunch of leaves, and I find the effect equal. And mm-hmm. so leaves don't require a trip to the hardware store, which I appreciate. And so for those people who aren't ready for a hoop house, you can just collect leaves in this fall. And then when you have a really cold night or as the nights get colder, pile your leaves around them. Now, you have to be sure when the sun comes out the next day to move your leaves aside because the tops of the carrots do need light. But on a really cold, frosty night, I'll just go out there and rake them over. And it's kind of like putting them to bed and pulling back the covers. And it works tremendously well.
Mm-hmm.
And with anything in the ground, carrots, beets, turnips. I also put the leaves over my spinach, and it works just as well.
Yeah.
And lots of people are certainly planting in raised beds, and that can take many forms. Does anyone want to talk about the different ways that you can have a raised bed and why some like to do it that way? Actually, a lot of people like to do it that way.
We started off at Bandelier when I asked the principal if we could have a garden. She said, oh, yes, we would love to have a garden. I know exactly where I want it. And she took me to the most barren, awful part of the campus. It was not my first choice. It wasn't even my third or fourth choice for where I would put a garden. And I was joking earlier about how when you get out there and you see that even bindweed won't grow in this lot, you wonder, what can I grow? And so for me, the appeal to it was the soil was questionable, and I didn't know how to get things going quicker than to go ahead and put in a box where it was raised up and we could put stuff in right away, because there's nothing like seeing stuff growing right away. And so for kids to have that kind of immediate reward, once you start growing things, that, you know, it's very inspiring for them. So raised beds are a great way if you're questioning whether or not your soil quality is all that great. You can build a box and put stuff in it, and the box doesn't have to be very big, and you don't have to build it. You can plant it in large pots, 5-gallon buckets, a variety of things. Raised beds are a variety of container gardening.
So, right. So raised beds, container gardening, will that will cut down the likelihood of having bad bugs?
Not necessarily.
They'll fly. I mean, they just find their way.
Well,
right?
It keeps the plants strong so they can withstand the bugs.
Sure.
Uh-huh.
So you don't have to use a lot of chemicals to control them. The plants are hardy enough to take it. Also, it just really improves the quality of the soil. If you can add layers of leaves, layers of compost, alternating. There's a term called lasagna gardening.
Oh, yes.
And they call it lasagna because of the layers.
Right.
And
So when the layers are
leaves, compost, some soil. You can throw earthworms in there. They create better soil as well.
Mm-hmm.
And then put your plants in, and then put like another layer of leaves, like Lisa was saying. And it helps helps them to stay strong, and it creates the soil as time goes by.
And I have also seen where you can take a plastic bag of compost or wherever you buy your soil, if you want to buy soil, cut open the top and plant directly in that.
Yeah.
You know, that's
it's good for lettuce, because lettuce can be finicky about the soil,
mm-hmm.
The acidity and stuff. So you just plant your lettuce directly in a bag.
One way to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I'm going to play a couple of announcements, and then we're going to continue the discussion. This is Women's Focus, and we're talking about cool weather gardening. Everything you wanted to know, maybe you thought you didn't, but you'll wind up thinking you did, and you'll go out there and try to put some seeds in Well, anyway, I'm talking too much. I want to play these announcements, and we'll get right back. Patty Ames and Mary Irwin and Nisa Patterson, and we're talking about cool weather gardening. I know some folks build raised beds using those concrete blocks, and I'm wondering, I see a little shaking of the head, is there any problem with that in terms of anything leaching into the soil that we should be aware of?
The only thing I wouldn't use for raised beds for food that you're going to eat are railroad ties because of the creosote that's coated on them, or painted boards, or some of the treated lumber. Usually, for treated lumber, the chemicals that are used in it are pretty bad for food. But virtually, I mean, I've done container gardening and everything from old shoes to plastic bags to, I mean, the sky's the limit when it comes to container gardens.
In the Southwest, though, clay pots and even the concrete blocks you're talking about, they can sometimes attract heat and draw the water away from your...
Dry things out.
So you can use anything. You just have to be aware of how it affects your environment of the growing, you know, of the plant. So a clay pot can be leaching the water out, and so you may just find yourself having to water more. So it's just about awareness. It's nothing bad or good, really, except for the ones we were talking about where it can be toxic.
Right. And I think that's one of the great things about container gardening, because you do have to pay attention to your plants. You know, you can't just put them in the ground and just expect them to pop up. There's some interaction there that has to happen to make them grow.
Well, I'm doing that for the first time now, and I don't know why I was so bent on having to do that. I just felt... I'm not so sure I thought it was going to be easier. Maybe I did a little bit, but I just wanted to be able to, I don't know, move the pots around. I just wanted to see what it was like. And I have a question. So do the seeds now, some of which are planted, do they have to be, and I actually put some stuff in the ground too. I put beets in the ground because I thought that wouldn't, and now they're coming up. Mm-hmm. So this is a week now. No, yes, tomorrow will be a week. And at first I thought they had to be weeds, because I have so many weeds, especially when I start watering. But I did see the red stem, and I said, those are beets. Yeah, it is. It's very, very exciting. Should those seeds in the pot and in the ground be constantly moist?
Certainly when they're germinating, they need to be pretty damp. And so for that first, you know, week or two that you're germinating those seeds for them to pop open, they need to be kept pretty moist.
So that may mean watering a couple of times a day or whatever.
Sometimes. I'll go out with actually a watering can, even in a large area, and just sprinkle the top of the ground a little bit so that it stays pretty moist. And usually we'll mulch pretty heavily, but that's after they've sprouted. You don't want to mulch before they sprout, which means, you know, covering them up a little bit so that they're protected from the harsh sun. But for that sprouting part, for the germination, you know, they need pretty full sun, and they need to be... during the summer part of gardening, when I was sprouting stuff, I would water a couple of times a day. But at this point, it's cool enough that it's not quite... the moisture doesn't burn off as quickly. So once a day is probably plenty.
Now, Patty told us what she's growing in this season. What about you, Mary?
We will be putting spinach in tomorrow and Monday. Lettuce, and we'll do consecutive sowings of lettuce because I like lettuce this time of year. In the summer when you plant, or in the late spring when you plant lettuce, it bolts very quickly and tends to be kind of bitter. So planting this time of year, it's very tender and usually a little sweet, which is great with kids. Again, if you're tasting food with youngsters, they really enjoy tasting just the lettuce. You don't even have to put dressing on it. So lettuce, spinach, I'll do some radishes. I've got some beets that I'll be putting in. It's the new moon is this weekend, and if you plant by the moon, this is a good time of year, a good time of the month. It's supposed to bring more water closer to the surface, theoretically, because there's higher tides if you're near a tidal area. So if you use that as a tool to plant using the moon, new moon is a good time to plant seeds.
What about you, Nisa? What's going in the ground?
I'll just read my list.
Okay.
Parsley, cilantro, radishes, chioga beets, only chioga beets. My family won't eat any other beets.
What is that?
It's an Italian variety of beet, and it's just different. And I think it's just better. It's very, very sweet. And everybody in my household looks forward to those beets. Heading or sprouting broccoli varieties. In other words, they have little shoots of broccoli instead of a big central one. I find the central variety of broccoli doesn't do as well in New Mexico for me. Mm-hmm. Lettuce, peas, bok choy, kale, chard, spinach.
Wow.
Carrots, turnips, Brussels sprouts, cabbage, broccoli, and then soon onions and garlic.
Holy cow.
And I've forgotten something.
Your garden's
right,
a lot.
Patty, I mean, do are there other things you would think of? Or?
You got it pretty well covered there, I'd say.
How big is your garden? How much ground does it take up?
So it's just a nice little suburban house, front yard garden. The whole front yard is probably, I don't know, 30 by 30, maybe a little bit bigger. And then I have double dug beds, which is another sort of methodology of doing gardening. You can Google it, double dug beds. But part of the principles of double dug beds and biointensive gardening is that you plant things pretty closely together. You take really good care of your soil. You nurture that soil. You plant things pretty close together so they shade the ground. And you can actually grow a lot in that when you grow things close together take good care of your soil.
Biointensive.
Yeah. And my excuse for not planting that much in my garden right now is I still have tomato plants that are they've taken over my 14 by 14 foot square garden, and so I have not as much room yet. And as long as I'm getting tomatoes, I want to keep getting tomatoes.
Right.
But then I'll do more planting later on.
I want to take calls in a little while, but first I want to ask you, for those who are listening who haven't done much of this and haven't done it in the fall, and they want to get started, and right now maybe can't think about building soil and doing all kinds of stuff and investing a whole lot of time. Let's talk about a real simple way of starting. And I think a few things have emerged from what I've heard the three of you say. You know, you can do it in a container. That's really an easy way. So you're not dealing with starting a whole bed. Or you can probably dig up your soil and put in compost. And you can buy really fine compost in bags and mix it in. So can we say that people can do that and buy a good potting soil and get the seeds that they want? What else do they need to know to start simply without it being complicated? And that's what I hope for myself, really, because I've grown before, but it's sporadic, and I want to feel comfortable on seeing some things grow and then take on more, you know, knowledge and do more some of the things that you were suggesting. So any suggestions, Patty?
I would say start small. Make sure you have a good location, south side of your house or
south-facing?
South-facing, good sun exposure. Things like radishes, or plant things that you like.
Right.
Because that's what, you know, you'll be inspired by. Trying to think of what else.
Yeah, you may grow beautiful broccoli, but if you don't like broccoli,
you don't like broccoli,
too much. I think starting off simply with lettuce. I mean, it's one of those things that I have to buy for my household. We have to buy lettuce frequently during the summer because our lettuce is bolted and turned bitter, and I always hate it because I know lettuce is so easy to grow. So I can't wait till fall to be able to do that, and it's so superior. It's so much better than what you buy. And it's so simple. So I think doing things that are successful that you like, and then keeping things wet, and making sure that it doesn't dry out, and that's pretty much all you have to do. Good sun exposure and keep things wet, and it's not that complicated.
Parsley and cilantro are nice right now. Some nice herbs if you just want to augment your cooking. And I think being really kind to yourself and listening to all, we can quickly go into all of our lingo, double dug beds, raised beds, permaculture, but we didn't arrive at that, you know, we arrived at that out of passion and interest, just wanting to learn about all these things, but starting really simple and being really kind to yourself about what you do know, and maybe all you know right now is you really like carrots. Well, then grow carrots, and you will grow, you will move in the direction that you're supposed to move in, I think, of your passion. But don't be intimidated by people who are further along.
Right. And, you know, I'll tell you that what got me, I said to myself, I'll be damned if I don't get to plant in the fall, because it's just within this last year that I became passionate about arugula. And I said, We didn't mention that. And I'm growing, I am growing arugula. I have a friend gave me a couple of baby plants last weekend that I put in the ground, but also I have the seeds. And I want to make arugula pesto. And I want arugula to add to my salads and dishes. So that, yes, if you can get excited about a particular...
And if you call it rocket, like they call it in England, it just feels even neater. So call it rocket.
What, arugula?
Yeah, they call it in England, they call it rocket. Southern. And I just think that's neat. So if you want to, if you love arugula and you want to call it something else, just...
The big advantage, too, of containers, especially herbs, is you can bring them inside. And you can put them on your sunny windowsill, and you'll have fresh herbs all winter long. I've done that with marjoram, which is a wild oregano, basil, parsley I've grown. And it's fun that you can keep them going and plant them back outside in the spring, and you have a head start.
Well, one thing that I would say about arugula is it is kind of a weed, really. And so in talking to my students this past week, actually, we were talking about what is a weed. And a weed is virtually anything growing where you don't want it to grow. And it could be a beautiful sunflower, but if it's not where you want it to grow, then we make this value judgment about it being a weed. So arugula is a weed, but it grows really well.
Okay, so let me just say that we don't have a whole lot of time left, but if you'd like to call in, and I'm going to ask my guests to put their headsets on and make sure you can hear my voice through the headphones. Give us a call with questions or comments about growing this time of year. The number is 277-5615, or you can call us toll-free at 1-888-277-5615, and we do have somebody on the line. So give me a moment to get you connected, and we will do that. Hi, are you there? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, yeah, now you're on. I'm sorry. Hello. You're on.
I should turn my radio down?
Yeah, if you're right next to the radio, just turn it right down.
It's a little distance away. I just have
No, it sounds like it's fine. Go ahead.
Quick question. I have the biggest problem with bindweed. What do you ladies do about bindweed?
Thanks for your question.
And I'll hang up. Thank you.
I have a fair amount of bindweed in my front yard, and the best time to dig it up is when it's small and trying to get it out when it's little. And after a rain is a good time to pull it out. Really, the only way to do it is to pull it out. I suppose you could use harsh chemicals if you're like me and you're averse to using chemicals, then you just have to get out and pull it up. And it does pretty well if you take a hoe and kind of hit it at the bottom of the plant. It'll come loose pretty easily, but getting it while it's pretty small, and then after a good rain, when the soil's loose, is a good time to pull it.
And unless someone else has something to add, I'm going to take another phone call. Go ahead, Patty.
You can also use black plastic and just cover that area and use either boards on the edges or bury it. And what that does is the sun will cook those plants and kill them. So that's a simple.
Okay, I'm going to take another phone call, but let me let you know, since we only have one line, if we're in the middle of talking and you're calling, the phone's just going to keep ringing, and then I'll get to it. Hi there, you're on Women's Focus.
Oh, hi. I just had a question about how deep do the raised beds need to be? That's my question.
Okay, thanks for the question.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you.
Take care.
You know, it depends on what you're growing, really. If you're growing a lot of lettuce and spinach and that sort of thing, it doesn't have to be very deep at all. You can do it in just a few inches, six inch board, inches, that sort of thing. If you're planning on growing deeper rooted things, I've found certainly at our school garden, having a deeper bed is helpful. Ours are about 2 feet deep. So it kind of depends on what you want to grow and how you're going to use your bed.
Okay. We've got another caller. Hi there, you're on Women's Focus.
I have a question that's sort of, I'm really excited about fall planting this year, too, because I didn't get a lot this summer, but I got enough to keep my confidence up. But one question I have, which is interesting, I wonder if the black plastic would work on this as well. The squash bugs are the bane of my existence, and I hear that they winter over in the soil. Mm. Is there any way to kill them so that when you plant your squash the next year, you're not plagued? And your zucchini with the squash bugs.
Nisa?
I do want to caution that when you use compost and leaves, they can overwinter in the leaves and the compost. So, yes, squash bugs are also the bane of my existence, and yet I have to develop a certain respect for their persistence. I don't have a good chemical solution to them. I pick a lot of them off.
That's what I've been doing.
I'm trying diatomaceous earth this year, too.
And rinsing off the seeds and constantly searching, but like I said, I know that they winter over in the soil. I mean, right just in the soil that they've been in. In the winter, they winter over down there.
Some people also don't plant anything they like for several years, and I know one person who said that's worked for her, but I think Pat.
I have a simple recipe where you take one beer and one cup of lemon soap and then one cup of ammonia, the ammonia you use to wash windows. And all those things are good for the plants. You wouldn't think so, but they are. But they take care of the squash bugs, and they take care of them in the soil.
You mean like a can or a bottle of beer?
Yes.
And what do you mix that with?
With one cup of lemon dish soap and one cup of ammonia.
And where do you put that mixture?
Then you can put it right in the soil, especially
when the plant's coming up, or
both. In like now, I would put it in the soil to help kill those bugs that winter over, the larvae. And then they also, when you plant squash in the spring, it's good to do.
See, we're all learning.
And I confess, squash bugs have brought me to a whole new theological understanding with gardening.
Oh, yeah, they're spiritual
because
beings,
they're,
yeah,
clearly.
I wanted to ask a question, the lessons to learn from gardening. So go ahead and expand on that, Mary.
Well, I would just say that I agree with Nisa. There is a certain point of coexistence with them that I've had to come to understand, and not being able to control everything. You like to think that as a human being you can be in control of lots of things, and as gardeners we like to think we're in control of our garden plot, and we do have a huge impact on it, but it's an interaction with nature, and sometimes nature wins, and squash bugs won this year for me. They beat me. So I'm glad to hear a new recipe.
Yeah, try the recipe.
Yeah, that's pretty interesting. Okay, we have another caller. Hi there. You have a question or a comment?
Yes. I have a question. I'm a teacher up in Santa Fe, and I teach life science biology to middle and high schoolers. And we are, you know, planning to start a school garden and so forth. And my question is about resources, people up here that you might, I might contact to get some of that expertise.
You know, Santa Fe is not my area where a lot of my contacts are, but one person I know who would be good is Lee Adams at Farm to Table, Farm to School. Okay. She would know, Lee knows a lot of people, and she would know a lot of people up there, but Lee Adams at Farm to Table.
Okay, great.
Okay, if you want to give us a call, we have a few minutes. We could take a couple of more calls. The number is 277-5615. You can also call us toll-free at 1-888-277. Hold on, I got to disconnect this caller so you can call. It's a little bit of a primitive system that we have. It's not highly sophisticated. Okay, we do have another call. So the number again is 277-5615. Also toll-free, 1-888-277-5615. Hi, you're on Women's Focus.
Yes, I have these little gray bugs that are popped up on my zucchinis, and now they moved over to my honeydews, and they're like killing my plants totally. Do you have any clue what they might be and how I can get rid of them?
Those are squash bugs, right?
You've got it, Kara.
Did you hear, listener, did you hear the recipe one of my guests gave a couple of minutes ago?
No.
Okay, so I'm gonna disconnect you, and you listen, and she's gonna give you the recipe to deal with those squash bugs.
Thank you so much.
Okay, you take one cup of beer, you take one cup of lemon dish soap, and then one cup of ammonia, the ammonia you wash windows with, and mix that all together. Put it in a spray bottle. You can spray the ground around your plant. You can spray on the leaves itself. If it seems a little thick, you can always add some water to thin it out. But usually that's very effective, and it doesn't hurt the soil.
I know. I just know, not having met you before, Patty, that you're not the type to do this, but you could market that. There will be lots of purchasers in this town.
Patty's and potion.
Yeah, Patty's potion, exactly.
I'm stopping on my way home to buy the, there you go.
The ingredients.
I feel hope for my pumpkins.
And it works.
It works.
Beautifully.
It does. I've used it.
The comment that I would make here is that some of the best resources for gardening are other gardeners. Yeah. Look around and find the Nisa Pattersons that are growing in your neighborhood. You know, if they have their garden right out front, then they're probably right out front with their gardening. And so you can ask them questions and how they're dealing with different things. Because if you're having a problem with it, likely they have too, if they're in the same neighborhood. And that's a big part of gardening is building that community. So.
Carla, hang on. I'm going to answer the phone in a moment, but I want to ask Patty again because I guess I was concentrating on a few things. I actually wrote down your recipe, and so forgive me if you've said this before, but you know also there are listeners that keep coming in and out when listening, and so it's okay. Did you say you actually spray it and apply it to the soil when you see the squash bugs, or you actually do it before?
I do it in the spring when I plant the squash.
Oh, soon you
so as a preventative.
You spray the soil?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And, as a preventative, yeah.
Right. But you can still, if you have them now, you can spray on your plants and it should.
Okay.
Not in the direct sun. Do it early in the morning or late in the evening.
Any kind of beer? We shouldn't really mention product names. But
any kind you don't like. Because the squash bugs, they don't care.
What about a light beer or you want full strength beer? Does it matter?
I don't think, no, it doesn't matter. It's the alcohol that is a sugar that feeds
right,
the plants.
Right, right, right. Okay, we may have time for one more caller. In fact, we'll take one more caller here. Oh, they hung up. Took me too long to answer. Okay, we get one more caller, we'll do it. So anyone else have anything to share about lessons learned from a life of gardening?
Humility. Humility is a very big lesson of gardening. And for me in particular, I need gardening because I can be an impatient person. And gardening is really, really critical for patience and humility. And I call carrots my spiritual guides because planting carrot seeds, I find that if you're planting carrot seeds and you're feeling impatient or upset, boy, you can pick up on that feeling very quickly. You're very aware of your internal state because you need to be very patient when you're planting carrots. And if you're not feeling like that inside, it becomes apparent really quickly. So I don't know about other people, but
I hear a lot of people say that, oh, gardening is just so much work. It's just too much work. And I guess my response to that is a quote by Kahil Gibran, and he said that work is love made visible. And so when you look at your garden, you'll see the love, and so it perpetuates your inspiration.
Let's take one last caller. Hi there, you're on the air.
Hi. I'm a retired teacher. I, for years, had a community-based CBI program that I ran at Chaparral Elementary School, and part of that program was gardening. I had a variety of subjects involved in it, not only the gardening, but math, you know, with the money involved in it. And I say that because we used to, in our classroom, take the seeds and germinate them into seedlings, and then the seedlings we transplanted into plants, into pots, and sold them on campus at 25 cents a piece, and were able to raise enough money to go on a field trip every year. My class was. And like it was mentioned earlier in the program, my kids were always looking forward to spending time not only growing these plants in the classroom, but also growing our classroom garden outside. So I want to say that I really appreciate this program, and hooray for the program that the APS is starting. It's wonderful. They didn't have this when I was teaching, but my kids really enjoyed it, and I got a lot out of it myself.
Well,
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you very much for the call. Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest things that's happening is, and not that it hasn't been done over the years, but to, that it's happening on a large level around the country, from what I can tell, gardens in the schools.
Well, sure, and we know one of the great things about gardens as an outdoor classroom is it's an integrative process. So you're not just teaching math during math time or teaching reading during reading time, but when you're in the garden, you're teaching multiple subjects in a context that provides meaning for kids, and that's huge. And it's very powerful for kids to learn in that way. So I think gardens are ideal settings for learning.
And there's so many reasons why we should grow our own food, and it is on a spiritual level. It's on so many levels, and I know we did a couple of emails, Patty, you and I, and you said one of the reasons for you is, you know, with the safety concerns about food, and that's
absolutely.
And that's a biggie. And what they're doing with our food is, it's more than unconscionable. It's almost criminal. And this is an opportunity.
I think growing gardens is a very empowering part of that answer because it's very easy. And working with kids, looking at big issues like that can get kids feeling really bad about their world. And so giving them a way to feel powerful, that they're stepping back and taking control over some of the bad things that happen around, is essential. And I think it's true for all of us to be able to be empowered. And growing your own food is a very empowering part of that, I think.
And, you know, there's various ways of doing that, because there's so many people who have such busy lives, you know, families or maybe single parent that has a couple of jobs and maybe young kids or whatever the circumstances are, there isn't much time to devote. You can try container gardening, for example, but then there are community gardens, and there are also more and more communities where families on a street or in a small community, they get a lot. I mean, lots are springing up all over the place. Alvarado Gardens in downtown Albuquerque, which is on Silver, west east of 4th. It's right
mm-hmm.
downtown,
mm-hmm.
and it's a huge garden.
Across from the train station?
Almost across. There's a new, somewhat new apartment building, Silver mm-hmm. Gardens or whatever. It is right across the street
across
from
the train station. Yeah,
right across from the train station. So there are many ways to investigate, and I think to become part of a community and get to know your neighbors and maybe shift responsibilities, there's lots of ways of checking out about how you can grow your food. Because we need to have control of our food. And when we go to the big box stores and, you know, that's almost not food anymore.
The average TV watching in this country, I can't remember the hours, but it's a lot. And I just would challenge people to replace 1 hour of TV watching mm-hmm. with 1 hour of gardening. We find a lot of time for TV watching.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm challenging us to find some time for other things in our lives.
Right. Any last thoughts about gardening, about doing it this time of year? I so appreciate all three of you.
Try
coming
it. You'll
today.
Like it.
Yeah. Try to like it.
Start
right?
small and yeah. grow what you love, and you'll be successful.
Go from there.
Yeah, there's still seeds in the stores that you can buy, and buy a container.
I do find that it's harder to find seeds as the season goes on. So if you plan on planting later on into the winter, buying seeds now is a good time if you're buying them in the store. So,
you know what? For the heck of it, somebody's been ringing and ringing. I'm going to take one more phone call, and this will be the last one. Hi, you're our last caller. Are you there?
I got the ingredients for the squash bugs, but not the amount. And is there a way to get in touch with some of these ladies? Thank you. Sorry for...
Okay, so the ingredients, one more time. And again, and again, this is Patty's Potion.
Okay, it's one cup of... dishwash soap, lemon dishwash soap, 1 cup of ammonia, and 1 beer, like a 12-ounce can of beer. And you mix that together, put it in a spray bottle, add a little water if you need to thin it out, and spray it on the soil, spray it around the plant, and good luck, and goodbye, squash bug.
You know, Patty may unintentionally become Woman of the Year in the gardening field.
She's my rock star.
She's actually my new hero. So.
Well, we'll see. I hope it works.
Patty, how long have you been doing this?
I learned about this about 5 years ago, and I haven't been plagued with them. So,
and you were before.
And I was before.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
There is hope.
There's hope. There's always hope.
There's always hope.
There's always hope.
So let's remember that. There's always hope.
There's always hope.
I got one last question, my famous last words. I say goodbye to my guests, and they're ready to go, and then they don't go because I'm asking another question. So I have planted so far in the pots, in one pot, radishes, and I mentioned their sprouts are coming up. Is there a way, I know there isn't a way, but is there a good way of how you space your seeds in a pot? Concentric circles to begin with before you thin them out? Anybody work with pots and have an idea to maximize the pot?
I like to plant them spread out a bit so that then the thinning isn't such a hassle. And then I also use the thinnings when I do that in the salads. So they're completely edible and very tender. Johnny's Seed.com, is it Johnny's Seed Catalog, they sell taped seeds. So they're already spaced, so you could plant them in a row. It's called a seed tape.
Oh, tape.
And especially with carrots, it works really well. They're already spaced out, so you can plant a row rather quickly.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. So. And another thing for me, I don't know if I'm the only person who has this problem. It's pretty serious that I can't get myself to thin.
So this is how I handled it. The issue for years and years, it was a spiritual crisis when I'd go to thin.
These are my plants.
How do you decide?
I eat them.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
I eat them as I thin them. I know that sounds completely bizarre, but especially like most of them taste really good, except for carrots don't taste so good to me, and I give them to my chickens. But I just sort of eat the radishes, I nibble on them as I thin them, and it completely took away the issue for me.
All right. Well, thanks for that. That will help.
In fact, I thinned some broccoli this morning, and I did eat them.
When I'm planting with kids, their little hands and their little fingers are pretty good at spreading things out. They're pretty good about that. And using rulers with kids, I mean, that's a big part of using the math, especially with young ones, for the spacing problem. So that is part of what they're learning, is that the measurements of how far apart things are. And their little hands and fingers tend to be a little bit more nimble than mine.
Put them in your compost pile. I mean, do something useful with them, I think, helps with that.
Now, somebody wanted to know, and this is totally up to you because you're not in business, you're just these individuals who have come up here to share your knowledge and experience, want to know if there's any way to get hold of any of you. And only if you're willing to give out contact information. Is anyone willing to? But do not feel that you need to do that.
I have a small business called Victory Gardening Services, where I help people who are new to gardening put in gardens.
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And so I'm happy to share my information. This is Nisa. I can be reached at 259-2074, 259-2074, and it's Victory Gardening Services, named after the Victory Gardens of the early part of this century.
Okay, this is Patty. Be happy to answer any questions. My email is patty@home, that's PATIATHOME, at hotmail.com.
And I'm a teacher, so I don't usually give out my personal information.
Right. No, that's fine. Absolutely fine. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mary Irwin, Patty Ames, and Nisa Patterson. I enjoyed this tremendously, and I hope the listeners did as well. And –